This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
On Joy 94.9, it is time for Sunday Arts Magazine here on Joy, and it's Brendan Bale and David Hunt with you.
Hello, Brendan.
Hello, David. How are you today?
Well, how could you not be well on a day like today? The weather is spectacular, isn't it?
It is, and a big thank you to Andy and Simon before we go any further.
Yes.
Fabulous show.
And they played a Noel Coward track. I was over the moon, so thank you so much for playing Noel Coward.
Wonderful. I love Noel Coward. I only sort of found out about him last year, which is a little bit sad, but yes.
Right.
Onto him.
Oh.
Fantastic.
A genius. His playwriting was incredible. He was a very, very good actor. Just the way, the phrasing on the way it's so unique when somebody does unusual phrasing, like with Shakespeare, for instance. He did it, but it was a lot more palatable for, you know, the English-speaking people. But just how he did it, and in song, it was just wonderful and very funny.
Very tongue-in-cheek.
And he went on to direct as well in Hollywood, and, you know, he became really big in America, from humble beginnings in England to very much a superstar worldwide.
Yes, and speaking of Hollywood and film, Andy and Simon did cover MQF a little bit earlier, but I did get to go see a few films myself this week.
Right,
a little bit different to their to Andy's recommendations, I think. And the biggest standout for me was a film called Blackbird, which co-starred the rapper Monique, who you might remember from the film Precious, played horrible, horrible character in that film. And she's not quite as horrible in this one, but she's still quite an aggressive mother figure in the film. But we'll see what happens in the end of the film. and it was just fantastic because the cast was primarily African-American actors, and a lot of them unknown. And I loved it. I really did love it. It was kind of a coming age story. So something that, you know, has been done a lot, especially in LGBTIQ films, but it was a fresh perspective on it. So I thought it was really nice.
Well, you see, I think, yes, those coming of age and coming out stories are quite common in film within our community, but because they're also different, everyone's got this very, very different tale to tell. You never get tired of it.
No, no. And one of the devices that is used a fair bit in film, especially sort of skewing towards younger, is the use of Shakespeare. And they do use Shakespeare as well, but once again, it's kind of skewed a little bit. And basically they try and put on an all-male or Romeo and Juliet with two male leads.
Well, you know that's how it was done in the beginning.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. And they discussed that in the film a little bit.
Oh, did they? Right.
And I really liked it. I think there was, unfortunately, only one screening at the festival. So if it does get a bit wider release in the coming months, or maybe in a year or so, depending on the release dates, check it out. I think you'll really like it. It's one of those sort of niche-y kind of films, but should be more widespread.
Right, okay.
Mainstream, I feel.
A rating from you?
I would give it... I gave it an A. It was very strong.
Right, okay.
I can't really make any more recommendations what they could have done differently. So, borderline A+ as well.
Okay.
So,
gee, that's very good. Then.
Very, very good. It sort of blew me away, actually. It was very powerful. Now, a film that I actually got to see previously at MIFF, which is obviously Melbourne International Film Festival, but also came to this year's MQFF, is Appropriate Behaviour. Now, this is an A+ film straight out. It is insanely good. The director and writer, Desiree Akhavan, she has actually just recently co-starred on Girls in the most recent series. A bit of a throwaway part, unfortunately. I would have loved to have seen a lot more of her in the series. But her insight into, GLBTI community, bisexuality, all those kind of issues that, you know, need to be pulled out and sort of discussed. She does it just effortlessly. So, yeah, I can't recommend that one enough. And so hopefully that one will get a bit more of a wider release.
Good.
And I got to see a lesbian horror film.
Right.
And, you know, I love lesbians and I love horror. So combining the two, it just makes me happy. Now, it's a film called Lyle and from a female director, Stuart Thorndike. And it stars the magnificent Gabby Hoffman. Now, she has a very, very tough role because she... Basically, the film is a little bit of an update of Rosemary's Baby from 1968. And so Gabby's got that sort of role of playing sort of a strong character but vulnerable. It's a very tough line to sort of... just a tightrope, basically, as a performer. And she does it effortlessly. So it's another film. It's quite a short film, 65 minutes. It's not very long.
Gosh, they told that whole story.
They told the whole story. It is succinct, you know, there's no throwaway kind of scenes. It's just, and I think it was based on, I think Sonia Hammer can correct me on this one, based on shorts, or it was going to be a series of short films.
Oh, right.
And they got the funding to make a feature film, and they've done really well with it. I really liked it. Not quite as strong as the other films that I've seen, but fantastic, and just for the performance of Gabby alone, definitely worth a see. And
interesting.
And speaking of Sonia, she did a chat afterwards, and yeah, I think that went down really well with the audience, talking about females in horror film. Well, actually, lesbians and bisexuals in horror films throughout the ages, which was fabulous to sort of see the different representations. Not always good, actually. Not often good at all, to be honest.
Oh, often playing the baddies,
exactly. So, but a very important thing to sort of look at and I guess see how far we've gone. Like now we've got a film starring, you know, the main characters are lesbians with a baby already and another one on the way and it's just played as normal. So, you know, progress.
Fantastic.
Fabulous. And now to finish off, Drown, I'm going to see tomorrow night. Festival favourite, Dean Francis, it's his newest one. And yes, there is a warning for violence that might disturb viewers, so I might have to, you know, put my hand up and make sure I'm not seeing too many naughty
things. Don't leave your feet on the ground. You've always got to lift your feet off just in case the boogeyman's under your seat.
Exactly. Well, this is just a drama. Well, not just a drama. It's a drama.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see this one because this is a back by a popular demand film, like Andy was discussing earlier. So, yeah, hopefully that means it's a quality film and I'll enjoy it. So
excellent.
If you do want to check out what's left at the festival, mqff.com.au.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
You're on Joy 94.9 at Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan Michael Bale and David John Hunt.
You finally put your middle name Sunday Arts. Fantastic. Now, you might remember that voice from the song Oops, I Did It Again is the title track.
The Britney song.
Done by Britney originally and then covered by the lovely Ali McGregor from her album Alchemy. We got to have a great chat with her recently.
We did a couple of weeks ago and she's here during the comedy festival doing the best of each night at the Spiegel tent. So
yes, fabulous. Now we did get a message in during the song. And speaking about film and the way that film can sort of tease out things, having my close relative come out recently, it's still important that film addresses delicate issues. Art changes and challenges the status quo. I couldn't agree more with that statement.
And thank you so much for that. We don't know who it is, do
we? I'll have to find that out because definitely a regular listener because we've got a few messages from that number. And if you do want to do the same, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au or give us a call on 1300 Joy 949 to connect with us on the phone. Now, talking about art and challenging preconceptions and status quo.
Yeah, or being blown away.
What better way to do that than talking to some young artists, up-and-coming artists that are already kicking goals, essentially.
Smart asses.
Basically. Britt Dargaville and Kate Fitzgerald, thank you so much for coming into Joy. Now, I hope I pronounced your names right. thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Now, we... As David said, we were blown away. We both went and saw the exhibition at NGV Australia during the week.
Now, it's called Startup, yes. Which is Top Arts 2015. Do you want to just do the little
blurb?
Yeah,
for our listeners that don't know anything about it, here it goes. For over 21 years, the popular exhibition has presented outstanding work by students who have completed art or studio art studies in the Victorian Certificate of Education. Providing insight into young people's ideas, thinking, and creative practices.
Now, just to start off with, congratulations for being selected. I mean, so that must be a treat in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't believe it still. It's been a dream.
Right. And what was it like when you went into, because you would have helped hang your own art? Well, Britt, yours is hanging very high up, isn't it?
Yeah.
So did you personally go in and say, this is where I'd like it, or?
No, not at all. I mean, the piece is neon, so it's very bright. It's obviously pretty protruding on other people's art, so it has to be high up. Otherwise, the light's going to be messing other people's art. So,
right, okay.
I didn't actually get to be involved in the hooking up process,
right,
but it was originally on a chain, but they decided to put the wires up, and I really like it. I really like what they've done.
Yeah. And Kate, yours is fairly small, and you need to get either side of yours as well, which makes it a bit of a challenge in itself as well. And you didn't have any say in where it was placed or anything?
No, I didn't. They actually set it up really different to how I set it up, but I like their way so much better.
Right, okay. Well, they are the experts, aren't
they?
At the
NGV,
they really know what they're doing. Now, being part of a collective of all students throughout the state of Victoria, when you first walked into the space and saw everyone else's works, which is, as Brendan and myself were saying, it's brilliant. The quality of everyone in the exhibition, it's just unbelievable. Were you blown away from it? Kate, what was your thoughts?
It was so intimidating. Everyone's work was so amazing. Like, yeah, so much talent in one room.
And Britt, what about you? Were you really impressed with everyone's work?
I was so impressed. And I mean, I'm a big sucker for conceptual work. And I thought that a lot of the work sent some really good messages. And I thought that was really important. So
yeah,
that was really nice.
Well,
yeah,
there's a couple of showstoppers. One being the feather dress when you first walk in, which is almost out of Game of Thrones in a way, isn't it? It's all individual feathers sewn onto this amazing dress.
Oysters as well? Oyster shells?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, oyster shells.
Beautiful.
And it's got little wings on the back as well. And lots of other tiny little shells as part of jewellery and stuff. That to me really stood out. But so many of it, and some of the fabric painting was just beautiful on silk. Mm. That was spectacular. But the other one that I like, and Kate, it was just next door to yours,
that's my favourite.
Oh my gosh, I love that one.
And do you know what it's called? Can you remember?
It was like
what?
The seven stages of grieving or something.
Yeah,
something
you're like...
Is that what it's called? That's even better.
Which is sort of the armchair, and then all the bits and pieces are around that laying on the floor of grieving, like bottles of beer and cans and food. But just the way it was done, it was just so unique and so different, wasn't it?
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw someone take a short video of it too, and it was so awesome to see it from different perspectives because it like made like a 2D thing become completely 3D and like a moving... I thought it was so awesome. That was my favourite,
Yeah, and very now with the whole concept and the way they presented it. That's what blew me away. So, Kate, let's start with your piece. What's it called?
Just Embroidered Portraits.
Right, and it's three portraits that you've embroidered. And what's the message behind it?
It's like about the relationship between someone's... how they look and how they feel and think and like... Yeah, like the relationship between someone's mental health and the way they look to other people.
So what you're saying there is that we see one image, which is the front image that you've embroidered, and it's all very nice and it's lovely. But then you go around to the back and it's all a little bit messy with all the loose ends because all the loose wires in your brain sort of thing. Yeah. So a great concept, and I really like the way that two of them are facing frontwards and I think it's the middle one, isn't it? It's backwards. So you're seeing that unravelling a little bit with one of them, then you work out that the other two are like it. Yeah. Why did you choose that topic?
It's always been something that I'm really interested and passionate about, mental health and everything. Like, I'm doing psychology this year and it's just what I'm interested in.
Right. Yeah. and tapestry? Why tapestry?
Tapestry was just, I was trying to fill up my folio, really, like looking at new things. And so I tried embroidery and I really liked the way the back of it looked, and it like worked with my theme with mental illnesses and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just went with it and turned out I loved it.
And during your studies, do you have the freedom to experiment a fair bit?
Yeah, we're like encouraged to experiment as much as we can.
Fantastic. And the first thing that jumped out at me, could it be related to maybe people's perceptions on social media, how they put themselves across as well?
Yeah.
Had you sort of thought?
I hadn't,
from
but
that,
that works really well as well. Yeah,
because I think that sort of jumped out at me of like how people present themselves to the world. But really, there's a lot more going on.
Yeah, like it's never what it seems. Mm.
But I also love the fact that you know, like you're studying that now, but you've been able to take that into your art form as well. Well, you were obviously very conscious of that when you were doing it.
Yeah, like I knew from the start I wanted to do something that I was really passionate about.
Right. Now, Britt, let's get on to yours. Yours is totally different. Like, Kate is very much the old-fashioned needleworking, even though it's very contemporary. I love the fact that you've taken it very much to now.
Yeah.
But yours is neon.
Yeah, it is neon, yeah.
And what's the title?
So it's called Political Problem.
Right. And what does the neon say?
So it says... successfully sensitive on the top, which is in like some capital letters, and it's supposed to be very powerful and dominating over what's underneath, which says emotionally unstable. They're both using stereotypical gender colors, the male being the blue on the top and the female being the pink on the bottom, which is in, you know, more collapsed script writing.
Right. Which, in a way, you're relating quite well with each other here,
yeah, totally.
Aren't you? Especially considering you didn't even know each other until today.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking about before when I was talking about the conceptual is obviously a big thing in top arts this year. Because a lot of them talk about, you know, how society is perceived and how one is perceived, which I think is really, really important, yeah.
And why did you use neon?
I chose neon because, one, I'm a massive contemporary girl, and like at the time when I was making that was like, that was a big thing to me. I was so excited to learn how to do that kind of stuff. I'm not a big science girl, but it was like, I find that stuff so hard, but yeah, it was great to learn about that. But I mean, two, I think what better way to get a message across than to have it like literally
neon
staining your eyes. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Can we talk about like actually working with neon though, like the logistics behind it? Like obviously you've learned how to use it, but how hard was it?
It's very complicated. I worked with a tradie who had been doing it for years. In fact, his father was involved in the Skipping Girl Vinegar.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
And did you know about that, neon before?
No.
And how famous it is here in Melbourne?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess to a degree, like, I'm very interested in Melbourne's culture. I love Melbourne so much. So, yeah, I have a bit of an idea, but yeah, I didn't know. I mean, I did it at Coles Neon in Bayside, and he was a great guy who was so helpful, and basically he did all the stuff that I couldn't physically do, like do all the technically, like I could get electrocuted right now, so I'm gonna stand back from that, but you know, we bent the glass together and we blew it together, and that was probably the most exciting part for me, because, you know, you make the I'm rambling a bit, but hey, you make the print and you sort of bend it onto the print, which is, you know, life size, and that's a lot of fun. And then you just vacuum and all the air out and put the neon in and whack it on a thing.
How close was the final product to your concept originally, though?
It was exactly the same.
Wow.
Exactly the same. I had the idea when I was, you know, sitting in the car listening to, like, political banter on the radio. and I guess, you know, my teachers were like, oh, neon, you know, you probably should think about alternatives. Like, it's a bit far-fetched. And I was like, I'll make it happen.
and so that obviously it was the first time you worked with it. Would you like to work in neon again?
Actually, I'm very keen to go on to other things. My boyfriend and I work a lot together, you know, painting and stuff. But I'd really like to learn special effects stuff. I really want to make skin texture. I don't know. I'm really into sculpture. So I think that sculpture is the thing that I will continue with. But neon, I think, for now, is going to be put aside.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And what are you doing this year? Are you...
Yeah, so I've got a lot of, like, not a lot, but I've got a little bit of attention from Top Arch, which has been awesome. And I've been asked to display the same piece, or if I decide to make another feminist piece, at Brunswick Street Gallery in September.
Right.
Which is, you know, a feminist collaboration with about 10 girls,
right.
Which will be really awesome to be involved with, because it, you know, makes a small community, which is great.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
It's Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan on your beautiful Sunday afternoon in Melbourne.
Stunning.
Someone else who's enjoying the day is the lovely Eric.
Oh, hello, Eric.
We always love messages in from Eric. He says, hi, David and Brendan. I don't know why you get first billing, but anyway, a very good afternoon on this beautiful day. I haven't been into the NGV to see startup yet, but I always see it as it's a highlight to see which students might be the most interesting artists of the future. Love young contemporary art. So exciting. And we even get a hug at the end.
Oh.
So, but it is very, very exciting. But I'm assuming it would be quite intimidating at the same time. So does this give you a lot more confidence going into the future? I'll start with you.
I haven't found the process intimidating as such. More very exciting. Yeah, it's given me a few, like, leads, which has been awesome. I mean, the contacts is just, like, incredible. It's been so awesome. But, yeah, I mean, this year I'm going to be displaying a few works, and then eventually next year I'll be studying at RMIT doing some fashion merchandising, and then hopefully some art history so I can go into being a curator.
Which it sounds as if you're planning a little bit now for your future.
Oh, I'm a big planner.
Good.
I'm not OCD, but I definitely plan.
And Kate, you're planning, but in a very different way, because, you know, you've gone into mental health. Can you see yourself getting involved in art down the track, or?
Yeah, well, I'm really interested in art therapy, which is one thing I'd want to look into. Yeah.
Okay, right.
But apart from studying, I'm still going to be doing a lot of art.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and especially considering that, as you said, the art therapy, and they are encouraging more and more people to express themselves in other ways, and art is obviously one of the really, really big things. Now, does this travel at all? Does this exhibition go to regional areas in Victoria, or is it just in Melbourne?
No, it's just in Melbourne.
Yeah, I think it's just a Melbourne thing.
Right, okay. Yeah. And it's on for a little while yet. It's on now until the 28th of June.
Mm.
So it's on for a fair while, isn't
it? Yeah, it's awesome.
And the lovely thing, Brendan, is it's got its own entry, and it's in the atrium part of the Potter Centre.
And it's visible from the street as well, which is fantastic.
Along Flinders Street.
For people, you know, they might not have been to NGV Australia before, and they might be walking past and say, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And probably seeing your sign just like, oh, come
I
to
felt
me.
So good about, like, it was so exciting seeing that from the street. It was so fun.
Well, yeah, it is directly facing Flinders
so
Street.
Lucky,
so
lucky, yeah.
What a great
awesome.
Spot.
Awesome.
But wouldn't it be great if people that haven't been or don't have a really strong connection to art sort of go in and see what our young artists are doing?
Absolutely. It's really wonderful. And again, congratulations for what you're doing and the subject matter that you have chosen as well. I find really fascinating. Instead of it just being a, well, there's nothing wrong with just being a painting and whatever, but your thought behind it is really good. So congratulations and all the best for the future.
Thank you so much, David.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Queen is in the house. That is Perfume Genius here on Joy 94.9. Sunday Arts Magazine with David and Brendan. Hope you're having a great day out there. If you do want to get in contact with us, 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Now, David.
Yes, Brendan.
Who have we got in the studio?
Well, there is a magnificent exhibition on at the NGV. It's NGV Day today. It's the Golden Age of China. And we have May Anna Pang. Is that right?
Yes.
I was always worried that I was going to say it wrong. Well, welcome and thank you for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Yes.
Now, what a beautiful exhibition to be part of. You must be very excited to be involved with it.
Oh, yes. I'm very happy with the great response because it was more than I had expected.
Right. Yeah. Now, these pieces are hundreds of years old, and some of the garments that they wore for coronation days and just beautiful. The workmanship in them is just so magnificent. And the fact is they're in incredible condition still. And are they that old? They've been in storage? They're the original pieces?
Of course, because you can see that who can recreate them now these days, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the workmanship. And, of course, the Chinese look after them very well.
Right.
In box, they have to be kept away from sunlight, you know, lightings, or otherwise they fade. Just like the paintings, they're in scroll form. You roll it up, away from. So, and all the objects that came, like the J pieces, were all packaged in boxes.
Right. And the how delicate a lot of them are as well. And some of the crowns are just beautiful and the workmanship in it. And you can see them so closely. Some of them have got on the crowns birds, little beautiful
phoenix. Phoenix represent the empress.
Yes.
Feminine. Yeah. And freshwater pearls and magnificent.
Yeah. So how long did it take for you to organise this exhibition, or is it an exhibition that normally tours the world, or is this the first time that it's left China?
Well, this is for us especially. We have a trustee called Mr. Jason Yip. He was Chinese, from Malaysia, trustee for 9 years. So he went to the past museum in 2005 to make contact. I introduced people for him to meet.
Right.
And then 2011, we had an Australian cultural delegation. We went to Beijing and visit the director there. And then anyway, to make it short, 2013. Oh, yeah. Also 2012, we approached the Chinese consulate here. And 2013, I made my wish list. And the whole idea is to impress them. So from that day, almost agree on everything.
Oh, wonderful.
And then they actually improved it.
Right. Yeah. And with what they sent?
Yeah, they had put a lot of thought into it. Because like one hairpin, you know, they changed their mind at the last minute. And I thought, why? And then suddenly I discovered this hairpin looked like the one in the painting of the beautiful woman on the table. Now, I don't know whether I'm reading into it or not.
Yeah.
Because all the objects in the paintings are represented by the actual object or examples.
Right. What I love about some of the paintings, and they're huge.
Yeah.
Some of them, it really is huge paintings, and the detail of it is so beautiful, is what life would have been like back then. Like there's one with the emperor being on a deer hunting expedition, and you see them coming down the hills, and there's hundreds of people that went out on this hunting expedition. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, it just shows you how grand and regal everything they would have done back then would have been.
Well, even now, China's a huge country, all right?
Yeah.
Even the big scale. And documentary painting actually introduced by the Italian Jesuit Castiglione. you know, of documentary painting,
yeah.
perspective illusion, and all that. So I was flabbergasted by how big they are, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I also like is that one of the emperors, the painting of him near the entrance is exactly the same garment. As you said about the hairpin, that's exactly the yeah. garment that he was wearing in that painting is hanging there for us to all see in its finery.
You mean wearing the... riding the horse.
Yeah.
That's the first painting. And actually, when he was a Manchu emperor, and, you know, like European equestrian portrait. And actually, I gave a talk yesterday, and one gentleman pointed out to me, his pose is like that of a king.
Yes.
Like a King George something, a statue I don't know, in Collins Street or somewhere,
yeah,
he told me.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Mm. So I'm sort of curious, you mentioned some were realistic representations and some were sort of mythical. So what kind of a ratio was it back in those days of the representations? So could you easily see something and say, okay, that's a historical representation, and say this one is kind of an altered reality?
Well, in Chinese history, there's the court academy, you know, artists work with imperial court,
yes.
more decorative object, functional. But then on the other hand, there was a scholar amateur, because in China, since the unification 3rd century BC, they use scholar as officials. So the scholar paint just ink on paper, more smaller painting to express themselves, like poetry, and not for sale, only give to like-minded friends. So there are two different kinds. At the end, you know, actually it moved like the Forbidden City. At the end, it's usually we have five paintings by the Qianlong Emperor himself in the style of scholar amateur. They're very small. And they're painting that people don't notice. Because according to the Chinese, they're not supposed to impress you. They say it's like chewing an olive. The more you chew, you know, at first bitter.
Yeah.
The more you chew, the sweeter.
Yes, yes, exactly. But also, some of the amazing pieces in the middle of the exhibition, clocks.
Oh, yeah.
There's one gold clock in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
Just magnificent.
But they're English. They actually had 20 to 30 of them from England, Williamson. Either given to them as present or an official bought them at Canton, you know, near Hong Kong, the entrance, and they gave to the emperor.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing with this shows how international and cosmopolitan. So on the one hand, Qianlong Emperor maintained the Chinese tradition, you know, expand the collection. But on the other hand, he opened to European influence.
Yes, and there's a train as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is
Barometer,
really,
French.
Yeah, the French train, which is so, so different. And and to them, you know, like where we're looking at all the Chinese artifacts as being very, very different to what we're used to, although we are used to it now. But back then, for those English and French pieces, for them, would have been very odd, and would have been probably held in high esteem within their court.
Well, the irony is, you know, like that clock, a figure can hit the gong.
That's right.
It's in the style of chinoiserie, you know, the Western impression of China.
Right.
And now they go back to China and look exotic. And actually, they imitate chinoiserie. There's a vase that imitate chinoiserie. Yeah. So that's why it's full of surprises.
Yeah. And one of the other things that I just loved as well was this chair that was made with the...
Oh, yeah, anthra.
Oh,
I didn't think they would give it. You know, I was very daring. I want everything.
Oh, you said you wanted that.
And and they gave it.
Yeah.
And because to remind them of their ancestry.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because obviously hunting was a big thing for them, wasn't it?
What they were semi-nomads, right? They crossed a great war. They thought the Chinese were weak because of Scots. They wanted to maintain their martial spirit. So hunting was some kind of military exercise and ceremony. But one thing I must point, I just thought of it today. There was a hand scroll of him hunting a deer with a Muslim consort.
Right? Oh, Muslim. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, Muslim.
And handing the arrow.
Yeah, yeah, the hand scroll in front of that. The interesting thing, that the deer was killed. Now, I have never seen a painting, Chinese painting, that show killing or war. I just suddenly realized this first time I see one.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. That it just dawned on you just
because
then.
Because I think I'm being Chinese, not because I'm biased. I think basically Chinese are peace loving.
Yeah.
There's no painting in China show battle scenes as
right,
in Europe
okay.
or killing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
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 Now, there was a representative that spoke Thursday morning, and speaking about the sort of transaction of culture between the two, you know, our countries, China and Australia.
Yes.
So how important is that in the philosophy behind the exhibition in terms of sharing culture with each other?
Yeah. Well, anyway, someone asked me, the good thing with this, in earlier exhibition were archaeology, but this one's very recent, the last dynasty, okay, 1644 to 1911, so should be accessible to people and show her. But the people don't know that much about China, okay? It's also China's own thing, too, because China think that they are at the center of the world, self-sufficient, you know? So I think this... today, but also throughout the exhibition, that the invader had always been assimilated, absorbed, and revitalized. So now China is facing a great challenge, global. And of course, in 19th century, the Opium War, China suffered a lot of revolutions. You know, so maybe I think now might be a beginning of a new golden age. Who knows?
Yeah, and somewhat sort of challenging any maybe misconceptions from Australian audiences.
Well, this is diplomacy. You know, Australia talk about multicultural and blah, blah, blah. China was multicultural too. Now there are 54 ethnic groups. People don't know that. And thousands of dialects, not just Mandarin or Cantonese. Thousands. So it's very diversified. And people, different food. So it's... You know, and so this would help people to understand and also appeal to everyone. You don't have to know anything. You can enjoy the beautiful objects.
Now, am I correct in saying that school groups can go through the exhibition for free?
Yeah, Rio Tinto pay for, which is very
lovely.
Because so I think this is a good diplomacy, don't you think?
Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. But as you were just saying there, and it's wonderful about the school children to see history. This is history.
I know.
But it's magnificent art at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just the whole cultural thing between Australia and China. And as you said, you've been really so pleasantly surprised that they've given us all the things that you wished for.
Apparently, they were smart. They want to give their best.
Yeah.
If they go through all that trouble, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's rather good. And a lot of things, you cannot see them in China. They're in storage.
Right,
one painting, Bird's Eye View of Forbidden City, they said they never hung it in Palace Museum. They're seeing not tall enough. In that one, you see a lot of tribute bearers. So there are people with flags saying from France, Holland, Japan, Korea, Burma, and Thailand, and Russia.
Right.
So that little painting, I only found out when it was here. I didn't know that before.
Right, okay. Yeah. And the wonderful thing about the exhibition is there are so many Chinese people going through it as well. So there's a real mixture of people seeing, as you said, probably art from their homeland that they might not have ever seen while they were living there, or maybe they were born here and seeing it, experience it like we are for the first time. And it is that whole, the beauty of it all. And people were gasping around me when they would all of a sudden look at something and go, and everyone would turn to think, what they were looking at.
Oh, yeah, yeah, me too. I mean, the detail, you know, some of the gold cups and the pearl. And I think for Chinese, they don't know much about art. And it's good they can. Like for me, you know, a lot of Chinese newspaper and Sunday I have to speak Mandarin. I have to translate Chinese, you know. And so the thing is, nowadays you really have to be multi-skill, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. and the wonderful thing also about it is when at the end of the exhibition, like every exhibition now, you go out and you go through the gift shop and there's a beautiful book that you can buy. Have you seen the book of all the pieces that are...
The catalogue.
Yes, the catalogue.
Yeah, yes.
Which you would have been involved in that?
Yeah, yeah. I involved in the five sections, 100 essays and all the labels. And the Palace Museum Ding Meng, he did the two essays.
Right.
Yeah, and it's very reasonable. You know how much it costs?
Oh, about $30, I think.
Yeah, yeah, $29. Yeah. Oh, I think it's so.
Yeah. Just so much to see, and, yeah, and this beautiful catalogue, as you said, to take away, and also some fantastic T-shirts. It's real, like, it's a real treat to go to this exhibition.
And the multimedia, mustn't miss, of the Forbidden City, and the music, apparently is composed by an Australian in Melbourne.
Okay.
I said we should acknowledge him. I don't know his, but the multimedia is fantastic.
At the very end, end. And it's a lovely way to exit the exhibition you really get to see what it looks like now.
Yeah, I want to copy the Monet exhibition. The movie at the end. Love that.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, yeah.
And thank you for being part of that wonderful exhibition.
And it is running until the 21st of June. So you do have a little bit of time, but get onto it straight away, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
Have a check it out. And if you do want more information, go to ngv.vic.gov.au. Thanks again, May, for coming in.
Yeah, and thank you very much for your enthusiasm.
My pleasure. Our pleasure. You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy.
You're on Joy 94.9. Don't know what happened there, Brendan, but there you go.
There we go with computers. Anyway, we have received a message in on Sunday Arts Magazine saying, great show, David, from Donna Frock.
And Brendan.
Well, me too.
Yes, and Brendan.
I have a little bit to do with the show.
You do.
Now, we do have a member has renewed their membership.
Excellent.
Tom from Collingwood, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
If you are still listening out there, I'm sure you are, Tom. I don't think you would ever miss Sunday Arts Magazine. And you've included a wonderful donation of over $200.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much, Tom. You don't know what it means to us. Keeps us on the air, and it keeps us talking all our crap. Yeah.
wonderful
content, yes, of course. Now, before we go, I wanted to talk about, it is a show at the Comedy Festival, but it's kind of askew from what you'd normally expect. It's not stand-up. It's not one of those kind of variety shows. Avenue Q, the musical.
Right, because that comes back here quite a bit.
It does.
Over the years.
And it's my first time actually seeing it on stage. I've heard the song so many times. I kind of have an idea of you know, what the set would maybe look like, what the characters sort of look like, and how they would interact. But it blew me away. I loved it.
Excellent.
I really loved it. And I'm not sure about, you said you've seen it in the past.
Yeah, I saw it about 3 years ago now, it would be.
Yeah.
Probably the last time it was here.
So I can't assume that it was the same kind of production. But in this one, you know, you see the puppets. Basically, it's kind of
see the person that's
handling them
as well.
So I was kind of expecting, because I was kind of expecting maybe they were sort of dressed all in black and you could only see the puppet. But it's very much, kind of confronting at the start, but I loved it. I love the concept of that.
Yeah.
Because you actually get to see them.
Well, it's more adult, isn't it? Because that's the whole concept of it.
Yeah. And so you can actually see the actor doing the puppeteering. And gosh, they're masterful. They're incredible. And you can see them singing as well in their little head mics.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just incredible. And the songs are very, very, very funny.
They're very funny and very naughty at the same time.
Yes. So it is playing for, I think, at least another week.
Right. And where is it?
It's at Chapel Off Chapel, the wonderful place there.
Yeah. Now, as we were saying, that the Queer Film Festival is, the closing night is tonight, but then they come back by request, the big ones. And so we've actually got to thank Lisa Daniels for, because she's retiring. This is her last festival after many, many years. And I sincerely want to thank her and congratulate her on all the hard work she's put in over the years, because it's like everything within our community, like Joy, we do it off of the smell of an oily rag. and it is quite expensive sometimes to get those films from overseas, and building up that friendship with all the different other festivals around the world, where she would have had to have travelled to them years ago, where now a lot of them would be coming to her. And that's kudos to her that they want to be part of our film festival.
It's fabulous. And it is, you know, the envy of a lot of queer film festivals around the world, well, even mainstream ones, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The way it's organised here, and can't say enough good things about the way
this runs. Yeah, so there's big shoes to fill there. I'm sure there will be somebody along the way that they will get. But thank you, Lisa. You've been absolutely brilliant. I'm sure she's not listening. She'd be at one of the films as we speak, or maybe even talking on stage right this very moment. But she's done a wonderful job.
Yep. Congratulations. And that is it for Sunday Arts Magazine for another week. We will see you 4 p.m. next Sunday afternoon. Have a great week.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.